we'll get the February 4th, 2015 meeting of the Palm Beach County MPO Technical Advisory Committee going. Welcome to the 2015 vision, the version of these meetings, if we can, real quick.
Steve Kwan. Dan Weisberg. Rashid Mohiden.
He's on his way upstairs.
Okay. Randall.
Ritzara here.
Can you tell me how to pronounce your last name?
Ritzara. Kreitz, Zara, Dick.
Okay, I'll get it.
What do you think?
Douglas Hess.
Present.
Brian Collins.
Here.
Jerry Allen.
Will it, Jerry Allen.
Carl Baker.
Here.
Charles Cohen.
Red Stutz for Charles Cohen.
Alice Hansen.
Here.
Jeff Livergood.
Here.
Kenny Wilson.
Here.
Angela Usher. Ingrid Allen. Terrence Bailey.
Here.
Tom Driscoll is excused. William Cross.
Joe Quincy, the Bull Cross.
Kim Delaney. Natalie Crawley.
Don Sonsen here for another show.
Tom Lanahan.
Here.
Jamie Brown.
Here.
Yeah, the call, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. We have before you, I'm assuming you've all read February 4th agenda. We need a motion and a second to adopt the agenda.
So a motion for approval.
Alex.
Second.
Tom, second. On favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopts the agenda for February 4th. We also have before you the minutes of December 3rd. I trust you took them home over the holidays and read them. Did it happen by the holidays? Didn't. Okay.
So I guess you're the
sound. Last month.
Do we have a motion for the minutes or any amendments to the minutes, please?
So moved.
Any motion?
Second.
Fred. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We have an acceptance of minutes. I don't have too many comments. I would like to point out, though, that Mr. Weisberg in his first meeting, not in the official capacity, is not here. So, any county staff, please take that up with him. Randall, is this your first meeting?
Yes, it is.
It's your first meeting, and welcome you. If everybody got to know Randall from Delray. I'm surprised you're here. I would like to point out for everyone here that Illinois did beat Minnesota in football this year. we won't get into basketball.
Yes, we will. Make sure
you get it. Those are the only comments that I have. I want to make sure that he feels at home. Nick, comments?
All right. Following up on your comment, Kim Graham is here from the county's traffic division as the alternate.
Okay. Well, yeah, but we still give Dan a hard time.
Fair enough.
I understand. So following up on a couple of personnel items, it's my pleasure first to formally introduce Valerie Nielsen. Valerie is our new transit coordinator for the MPO. She started with us the first full week of January. And I know because we've had such a hiatus, you haven't had a chance to meet her yet. So please introduce yourself to her after the meeting so she can get to know names and faces. And also want to highlight that Fran Taylor is with us this morning. Fran is our new bike head coordinator with the MPO. You met her in December because she came down from Birmingham for a special trip just to meet all of the committee members and kind of get acclimated, but now she's here full time. Just want to say both of them have hit the ground running and they're tremendous assets to the MPO. We're glad to have them aboard.
And Fran, it's good to see that you survived last Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, I say they've hit the ground running. They really have. Meetings in communities about controversial projects, it's been a lot of fun. Second item for me, the MPO staff rode tri-rail down to Delray Beach in December for our annual office lunch, and we learned about the importance of timing trolley arrivals against the train schedule. To quote Maxwell Smart, we missed it by... and that was valuable for us because we were doing this rolling retreat with the MPO board members and a lot of members from the public the following month, and we capitalized on that lesson and made sure that we worked closely with Randall to time the trolley schedules from the train to the downtown area. And thank you very much for your support. I know RTA was fantastic as well. I don't see anyone here from... No, Doug, we'll give you the credit for the Boca Raton assistance with the trolley or the shuttle system down in Boca and the walking tour of the El Rio Trail. The overall event was fantastic. I think the board member response was very, very positive.
from our elected official at our city commission meeting this week.
Good, that's great. Follow-up, next item on my report, I'm stealing a little bit of thunder from Fred, but I wanted to make sure everyone is aware that Home Trans Connection Service officially changed to its new set of contractors this week. The county assumed full dispatch responsibility for that service, as well as introduced 231 new vehicles into active service this week. They're being driven and maintained by the new contractors, but the Home Trans staff are now controlling dispatch. So we look forward to that transition providing a more efficient, reliable experience for the Home Trans Connection riders in Palm Beach County. So, and then an announcement on behalf of Lisa and Steve. The DOT is performing a major update to the Florida Transportation Plan, as well as the CIS Cost Feasible Plan. In order to do that statewide effort, they are conducting 5 regional workshops or regional forums to solicit input from all the stakeholders around the state of Florida. We have the benefit of hosting in Palm Beach County one of those 5, the only one in Southeast Florida, one of those 5 regional workshops. It's going to be in Delray Beach tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 5 o'clock at the Old School Swear Gymnasium. We did provide agendas for the workshop, the forum on the sign-in table, so I hope you had a chance to grab one of those. If you would like to participate, I understand they're going to have breakout sessions. We've provided the website at the top of the handouts on the table, so you can go to that website and actually sign up so they know you're coming and they can kind of size the breakout sessions appropriately for the number of people that are going to be there. You don't have to sign up to show up. You know, we're all big on public participation, so you can participate even if you just crash the party. But I did want to make sure you were aware of that. Next item for me, the MPO board is going to be making a proclamation at its February 19th meeting declaring March as Florida Bike Month for Palm Beach County. To support this, the MPO is working with our commuter services partners, South Florida Commuter Services Partners, to create a central website to promote bicycling events and to provide biking information for all of Palm Beach County. We're also working with county parks and our local governments and anyone else, stakeholders, bike clubs, et cetera, to populate the calendar of events to make sure that we have highlighted all of the relevant events for bicycling in Palm Beach County, particularly in March, but we want it to be an ongoing resource to our citizens. Practical matter for you guys, we would encourage local governments to make a similar proclamation to the one that the MPO board will be acting on. The county commission will also be making a proclamation. We will be providing a template to the members of our Bicycle Pedestrian Greenway Advisory Committee, and I believe Richard Radcliffe actually sent that out to the League of Cities members earlier this week, I think Monday, yeah. And we also would encourage you, if you're conducting any bicycling events in your area, to provide that information to the MPO so that we can include it on our website calendar. There will be an online way to provide that information through the website once it's up and running, but for now, if you have anything, you can just send it to my attention and I'll make sure they get it to the right staff person. Last item, actually I've got 2 more. So last item of work relation is the fiscal year 15. We're in the middle of fiscal year 15 for the DOT's work program, and I did see 2 what are called three administrative amendments to the DOT work program to add line items into the work program. I wanted to make sure this community of advisors was aware of, and they were the funding of a $1.4 million resurfacing project East Main Place in Pahokee, the funding of a $1.4 million resurfacing project with MLK Boulevard in South Bay, and a $500,000 project for the resurfacing of South Canal Street in Belgrade. These are state-funded projects through the implementing $9 million that was allocated in fiscal year 15 to the Rural Areas of Opportunity Program. And these are the major projects in Southeast Florida, and they actually garnered the majority of the funding. Over a third of the funding statewide was allocated to the 3 communities in western Palm Beach County. So we're very pleased to see that kind of investment being made by the state of Florida in our western communities, and I wanted to make sure everyone was aware of that. And then the last item for my report is that the University of Kentucky, my alma mater, is now 22-0, heading into Saturday's matchup with those folks up in Gainesville. So we are looking forward to...
You were going good. you did.
We're looking forward to a hearty contest in Gainesville on Saturday.
You don't even get to know your players. They don't stay long enough.
Yeah, but there's a number of sophomores and juniors this year. Bigger number than
what
I
they sit on the bench.
Yeah, 2.9 guys, 10 guys. It's a unique team. An interesting stat, since he brought it up. An interesting stat.
Since he brought it up.
Then shall we go around the table? Schools.
So, just because you brought it up. So, the University of Kentucky actually ranks...
You know Kentucky's engineering program.
Point of order!
Who elected him here? So, they actually rank 1,087th of all schools nationwide in the number of minutes played by the highest person on their roster. So, like, they have so many people that are playing this year that the person who plays the most minutes only plays 25 minutes a game. And so that was, like, the lowest of any of the NCAA schools as far as the number of minutes played. It's a team effort.
Wow.
It can tell.
There's
an interesting fact going for the morning. And that concludes my
response. And then also was ranked number one in civil engineering.
There you go.
Thank you very much. We will accept more college stories, though. They got some things, particularly the bars. Any comments from the general public or the audience today? Please limit it to 30 minutes. I changed that agenda.
30.
All right. Thank you very much. Our action items. The first item for serious business is the Florida Turnpike fiscal year 16-20 work program.
All right, so Mr. Chair, before I introduce Randy Fox from the Turnpike staff, I do want to explain to you briefly why this item is on your agenda. The Turnpike presented their work program as it was given to me, to the MPO, in December, along with the rest of the D4, District 4 DOT work program. But then they provided significant changes to me just prior to the MPO board meeting. Rather than introduce those changes as an amendment to the backup material at the meeting itself, I asked them to defer the presentation of that information to us in February, in our round of February meetings. I also want to highlight the role of the MPO and its committees in this process. What we're being asked is to evaluate the proposed line items in their work program, both for consistency with our long-range plan and for consistency with our project priority list. And this gives us an opportunity to raise any potential concerns or questions that we would have. In particular, I want to note that the Turnpike is proposing to widen the main line from 4 to 6 lanes between Lake Worth Road and Okeechobee Boulevard first, that they're suggesting that they would fund design of that segment in fiscal year 16. And I want you to be aware that that approach will leave a 4-lane segment between the Lantana Toll Plaza and Lake Worth Road, where they're suggesting that they would program design funds for that segment in fiscal year 20. The MPO's adopted priority list is a suggestion for Turnpike projects. We don't control the allocation of their funds, but we can give them our ideas and input. The MPO's adopted priority list requested widening of this entire segment together in order to avoid creation of what we would consider a potential bottleneck, going from 6 lanes to the south to 4 lanes and then back to 6 lanes for the regional trips that are traveling along the corridor. So your input on that timing, that schedule, would be valuable to them, I think. And I also wanted to note there are 2 interchange improvement projects in their work program at EGA Boulevard and at Glades Road. These projects were not explicitly identified in our long-range plan. They're minor operational improvement projects to improve the performance of those interchanges, and I'll leave it to the Turnpike to explain to you in more detail what the scope of work will be at those locations. But I did want to highlight to you that they're in the work program and help you understand why they're not explicitly identified in our long-range plan. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Fox from the Turnpike Enterprise to make his presentation. And he's actually going to cover both items 2A, which is the work program, and 2B, which is a request for amendments into our adopted TIP for fiscal year 15 to advance a couple of the projects that he's going to be talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Yurin. I think that completes my presentation. Do presenters typically come to the front of the room? Is that, what is your pleasure? I'm the first one up, so I'm not sure what.
Yeah, come on up here so everyone can see you.
Yes. And before I get started, I am Randy Fox. I'm the Intermodal System Development Administrator for the Turnpike out of Ocoee. And I'd like to introduce my new MPO liaison that's responsible for South Florida MPO activities. Janessa, if you would stand up. Janessa Casanova started with us a few months ago, and she's going to be responsible for coordinating our plans and programs to make sure they're consistent with the MPO plans and programs. pleasure to be here. I haven't been here for a number of years. Ever since the 2008 recession, our revenues dropped considerably. Turnpike 100% self-funded through toll revenue. We pay for our troopers, the guardrail replacement, the lights, of course, all the expansion projects and capacity improvements. But traffic dropped down a little bit also. But it's coming back, and you guys are next in line for some improvements. So we have been able to drop over $70 million worth of improvements into the Palm Beach County WIC program. And I'm just going to go through some of those. I'll be speaking primarily from our summary. As Nick pointed out, we have a handout in your agenda package that summarizes our major projects. So I'm going to be talking to that, but I'll have to summarize that for you as well and cover some of the major points of that. So again, the $70 million is the major projects that are in our tentative work program between 2016 and 2020 program starting in this next July. Many of those are in the 2016 that starts July 1st of this year. There's also several resurfacing projects. The major projects, that includes the two interchange improvements that Nick discussed at Blaze Road and PGA Boulevard. Those are primarily turn lane improvements at the intersections. We also have design and construction from essentially the Palm Beach County line to PGA Boulevard, with the exception of a couple of segments that were already expanded to six lanes. Those are going to require a TIP amendment to complete the design and bring those up to an eight-lane section. We're not going to program the construction yet for that, but we are dropping the design into this current year. We want to get started very soon to complete the design of those two segments that are from Glades Road up to Boyd Beach Boulevard. Those are already six lanes. The rest of the main line throughout Palm Beach County will be designed in the next couple years to eight lanes, but we're constructing six lanes today. So we'll be ready to go to eight lanes when it's needed. In addition to those major projects, we also have all electronic tolling. That's going to be coming forward in 2018. This is taking cash off of the system. It'll be high-speed processing through a gantry type of system. You won't have a plaza to go through. The lanes will not narrow down at the plaza points. That's a cause of a lot of congestion. A lot of crashes occur there. So we've already, of course, changed some Miami-Dade County a few years ago to all electronic tolling, took all the cash out. You can still pay cash. You just have to have a SunPass transponder, and you can load that up at different points, or you can tie it to your credit card. So you can still pay cash, but you can't pay cash on the system. So we are going to be eventually completing that transformation throughout the entire turnpike system. We're also in Central and West Florida, and eventually we'll be opening a section up in the Jacksonville area. So everything in the industry is moving to the all-electronic tolling, and we'll be doing that as well and moving up the line in Palm Beach County. By the way, you'll also be able, let me just, before any questions come up about that, you'll also be able to not have a SunPass transponder for those of you that are slow to adapt to new technology and don't want to put out $5.95 to buy one of the sticker tags. You can have a toll-by-plate, a photograph of your tag will be taken and that will be processed, but there is a $2.50 surcharge applied to that at the end of the month when you get your bill in the mail. So that's the cost of processing those invoices. Are there any questions so far? Yes.
Can you tell me again what exactly is happening at the PGA exit?
PGA, I probably won't be able to tell you exactly what's happening there. That's the only one I'm not sure about. I think it's a southbound turn lane, and I believe it's a westbound on. So I think it's an on and off turn lane, but I have to get back to you on that. I thought my traffic engineer was going to show up and tell me about that. I'm more familiar, one of your people might actually know, if you have one of your public works engineers in here. But I'm sorry, I do not know the specifics of that one. I looked at that a few years ago as it was being developed, and I haven't checked recently to see what moved forward. So I have to get back to you on that.
Okay, I'll give you my first. Thank you.
Yeah.
John, I put it on the screen so you can read at least the text.
Yeah, I saw that in the back. Okay, good, thank you.
Okay, so it is a left turn on. Thank you. That helps me from having you back.
Thank you.
And the westbound right turn would also be. I think those are both on
PGA
the rules. Yes, yeah. Getting them off of PGA onto the turnpike.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Forgot we already had it written up there. I wanted to bring it up. I thought I'd tell you that.
Question on this section between Okeechobee and PGA. Has the design been completed on that one? I know there was a lot of design work being done, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. There were some public meetings.
For which project?
Okeechobee to PGA, the widening from 4 to 6.
The design was not completed on that section. This is what's in our program.
So there's going to be additional public meetings because there was a lot of interest from the communities that are adjacent to the turnpike on how some of the noise impacts were going to be mitigated and so on.
If they were, if they qualified for a noise wall,
they
are. That was done in the PD&E phase. That was done many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some controversy associated with the noise walls. We have a meeting, we've had a few meetings lately with some of the homeowner associations. Many of them are not qualified to receive noise walls.
Well, some of these ones are. At least the PD&E indicated that they were.
Okay. Well, then that will be further evaluated in the design phase, and there will be some additional outreach.
If I could ask, let's go through the entire presentation and hold any questions until.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As Nick mentioned, two of those projects will require a TIP amendment. Those are the two that are identified. I have Nick has a scratch map up there that I just resequenced the projects and put them in a sequence for you so you can see all of the widening, design, and construction on one side of the map and the resurfacing projects and interchange improvements on the other side just to help organize it a little bit for you. But it also shows those 2015 projects. I have a nicer map attached to our summary, but I just wanted to put this in order for you and just show you that there's two projects in 2015 on this map that'll have to be part of the TIP amendment because those are going into this current year. And Nick, I believe your other agenda item has to do with completing the LRTT update. And we're going to come back at some point and need to amend your LRTT with the board's approval. Because I don't think all of these widening projects are consistent with the LRTP. I think there was one or two segments that somehow did not get included in the LRTP. And much of this is because essentially we had deferred all our projects in Palm Beach County as a result of that recession. And a lot of this we're able to now come back with. We've gotten to the point of putting a date at the bottom of our summary, because that date changed weekly, and that's why we were not able to get this latest version to you in time to go before your board when the District 4 folks were up here presenting their work program. And we continue to balance up to the last minute. Some projects are cash funded, sometimes we can bond fund a project, and so as they play around with that financial scenario, they're able to squeeze a little bit more out of the work program to put in Palm Beach County. So I apologize for that, but we are going to get it all caught up, have some major investments coming forward, and eventually we'll get the LRTT caught up if there's any gaps in that.
Randy, just to clarify, so the MPO's long range plan shows 8 lanes on the turnpike from Broward County line up to Boynton Beach Boulevard. And then it shows 6 lanes on the turnpike from Boynton Beach Boulevard all the way up to PGA Boulevard.
Yes.
So the only reason we would need to process a long-range plan amendment is if you were seeking a program construction beyond those lanes, the number of lanes that I just opened.
That's true. And those are not programmed at this time.
So So I don't think we're looking at a long-range plan amendment.
Great.
In the near future.
I appreciate that, and I don't know what the timing of that 8 million is at this point.
Yeah.
But we monitor it every year, and as it's needed, we'll come forward with that. So we think that 6 million will get us a good number of years, maybe 10, 15, depending on how much growth occurs.
Okay. Is that the end of the?
Yes, sir.
All right, the item before you, item 2A, is the approval of the Florida Turnpike Fiscal Year 16 to 20 Work Program. Any questions on that? No.
More a comment than a question, I guess. Perhaps Randy can offer something. Glades Road handles the unprecedented traffic volume of 80,000 cars a day. It's a six-lane arterial.
Yes.
And the reason it does that is a lot of people are going to that turnpike. And there's no other opportunity to get to the turnpike south of there until you get to Sawgrass Expressway. Being this is the technical advisory committee, not the political advisory committee, to me, I don't see the logic or technical sense in prioritizing 8 lanes on the turnpike north of Glades prior to a new interchange somewhere between Sawgrass and Glades Road. I know you're improving the Glades Road, but interchange, but that's really a turn lane intersection improvement, not a network improvement.
That's right.
So that's my issue with the turnpike. Yeah.
And you're exactly correct, and I can't argue with that. Hopefully we can get out there with an interchange improvement of substantial capacity before that 8 lane comes forward. Right now we're just designing for the 8 lane. You are probably involved in the Palmetto Park Road, just downstream. There are a couple of miles and that had some neighborhood opposition. We had to drop that proposed new interchange that would have provided substantial relief to the Glades Road interchange. We're still looking at some other alternatives. We've got a couple concepts that we're drafting. We're not ready to share with anybody at this point, but we recognize the need for additional capacity for access in that area.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
That was a good comment.
Any other questions or comments?
Can you speak to Nick's previous comment of the potential bottleneck if you do the plan as programmed for going from 6 to 4 back to 6 lanes? And why one may be advanced before another? I assume there's a sensible reason.
There is a, yes, as Nick mentioned, there will be a bottleneck there at the toll plaza, at the Lantana toll plaza, because our widening stops just shy of the plaza, and that's for the all-electronic tolling conversion to take place. They have to eventually put new gantries up and demo that plaza, and so that does fall behind a couple of years on our schedule.
Any other comments or questions?
Just a quick, I mean, you mentioned the SunPass. I've heard off and on for years about coordination and compatibility with EasyPass. Is that
yes.
Any closer to the finish line?
EasyPass, where's EasyPass up north?
The northeast.
Yes, and I don't have the latest on that. There's a number of states that are already compatible with the turnpike. I don't have a list of them. They're working on that every day. I get emails where they've added another state. I'll try to bring that to the board in case they have that question, and I'll get back with you.
Yeah, before everybody takes their summer vacations. Khrushchev?
Question to Nick. The interchange for Palmetto and Turnpike, was that one of the interchange which was evaluated? Remember when we were doing the 2014? You did a tier 1 and 2 analysis, I think. It doesn't look like. Was there an interchange part of that analysis?
No. No,
that was
the purpose of that analysis was to evaluate where grade separated interchanges at the intersection of two arterial roadways might be of use.
It was not for expressways.
The reason the turnpike interchange at Palmetto Park was not included in the 2040 long range plan, although it was in the 2035 plan, mm-hmm. is that the turnpike had initiated the process to advance that interchange, had met with the opposition that Mr. Fox described, and had then removed it from their master plan because the communities didn't want it.
So
the MBO following the Turnpike's action to remove it from their master plan, removed it from our long-range plan as well.
Anything else? Would you, with your electronic polling effort, be changing all the access points to free-flowing either Sun Pass or Turnpike?
Yes.
So all the
all the ramps go away. It does actually, the ramps help meter some of the traffic approaching the intersection. So now the intersections become the primary constraint.
Right.
So
but that would happen, and that's
that will happen. All the ramps will be converted at the same time as the main line plaza.
That'd be through the whole county.
Up to Lantana at this point. Okay. We're not rolling it out. But eventually, it'll go from Lantana. Once we get up into the ticket system, it's a long haul, 100 miles or so, and it's a little more challenging.
Okay.
So, but eventually it will translate throughout the entire system.
Okay.
That'll be next on our list. We're already converting actually someone who are on the west coast of Veterans Expressway, and the sun coast is being converted as well. In Central Florida, probably last.
But you would be doing the Lantana ticket?
Yes, Lantana will be in 2020, I think it is. And 2018 is our ADT conversion. The bottleneck that was raised was really in 2020, but the ADT conversion is 2018.
I've driven some of the system down in Dade County, and the change is phenomenal.
It's dramatic, thank you.
And there's the one, I don't remember exactly where it is, but it was a mainline toll situation. It was horrendous when you would go through there, and actually watch them build that, and now I've got to see them tear that one out. But it's quite a transformation.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That was a terrible bottleneck.
Yes.
We went through that plaza, and then they had to merge and then change and get it ready for the ramps right there.
Yeah, the Exeter home right there.
Yeah, we've had a lot of good positive feedback there. I don't remember the exact numbers, but the crash reduction is phenomenal. It's just incredible.
Thank you.
One more question.
Yes, sir.
I haven't traveled in a long time. Turnpike southbound here in Okeechobee, we have a big issue of merging and stuff. Is it being worked on or just finished?
The issue, which issue exactly?
The merge when southbound off and then northbound to, off and
You're talking about at the plaza itself?
Yeah.
I think we've done about everything we can at the plaza. I believe they realigned the ramp a little bit for the southbound off. I think that's been done. I believe I was on the new ramp that got up here today.
Yeah, it was being moved on, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
But the plaza is there's still the backup at the intersection. The intersection is constrained, and eventually that ADT will have to come through and take that plaza out.
I think last time when you were here, I think I probably made a motion to improve the park and ride light lots in your design and everything. And especially now that you are probably cleaning up a lot of space away from the toll plazas, which you won't be, you will have enough space, and they should be really designed. I know it's a problem for you guys because you are revenue-based and you want to have more revenue instead of people carpooling. But from planning perspective,
it's not to our benefit to put park and ride lots in, but we're looking at it because that's the desire of the MPO, and we're actually being proactive for change. And we take these plazas out, and some of them have some large parking areas. We're looking at the opportunity to put park and ride and replace those parking areas with park and ride. The problem becomes whether you can get access safely by people that are you're crossing now across high-speed ramps that are just looking to get to that stoplight. So there's a balancing here of the needs of the commuters and the traffic safety that has to be looked at very carefully. But we're trying to be a little more proactive in terms of the park and ride and look at those opportunities. So if you see some from your perspective, let us know. If we haven't already looked at it, we'll be glad to take another look.
Nick also mentioned that bottleneck situation that you guys are planning for. Why not just do the southern segment first? and then what?
For that Lantana section?
Yeah,
I have to ask the engineers why they did that. I don't know what the rationale is, except it takes, you know, they have a construction period for that conversion. And you can't take the plaza out before the conversion. You have to keep it in place until you can collect tolls the other way. And all I can imagine is it's probably a matter of sequencing the construction.
Randy, if I could. My speculation is that the widening sequence is driven by demand volume, not by drivability. And so higher numbers north of Lake Worth said, let's make 6 lanes north of Lake Worth first, and then we'll catch up south of Lake Worth through the plaza when the numbers catch up to that need. My question to you is there any potential for including the widening with the conversion of the plaza and bundling that together as one construction project, which would potentially accelerate the schedule for the widening and make it less of a bottleneck?
Yes. And I would say there would be, except they have that AET in 2018, and I think there's a constraint with getting ready to roll out. When you turn the switch on the AET conversion, it has to all go at the same time. But I'll ask the question.
So we may not be able to modify the scope of that project because of the delay.
Well, no. I don't think AET is going to be able to be advanced any further. There's a lot of quite frankly, we have utility conflicts in Palm Beach County and in Broward.
And I'm not suggesting that we change the schedule for the all electronic polling. I'm suggesting that we increase the scope of work on that project schedule.
Okay.
So that while you're replacing the gantry, you're also adding the third north and southbound travel lane from the plaza north to Lake Worth, so that when you do the 6-lane widening north of there, it's a continuous 6-lane corridor at that point.
Yes, past the plaza. All right, we'll ask the question and get back to you.
You're going to have to deal with all that extra asphalt anyway.
The plaza is huge on the one
in Dade County, you drive through it, and it's like a whole parking lot. Other roadways on both sides.
It's a parking lot on the side.
Yeah. Well, but you don't park there. But yes. I mean, it's you don't
want to move all that extra pavement when you're doing this.
I don't know what the exact plans are, but they do take it out. I'm not sure where you're talking about. Done up all the blades. Are you talking about down on the where the the bifurcated plazas are down
two,
on the
two sets on the
Snapper Creek. Snapper Creek.
It was a while ago.
They have a bifurcated. They have one section where they have a split. They have a split plaza. Where you go through the southbound and the northbound.
They're all set from each other.
That's a unique area.
Yes.
Okay.
So anyone else?
Can the motion be to approve with consideration, especially give special consideration to improving and providing park and ride lots where they can be feasible, and also if you can include the segment of Lantana Hills further north to avoid the bottleneck, because it would be additional hazard reading.
Second.
Right. Just a question on that. If that same request was made for the last work program that was presented, what happened with that? I mean, if I just continue to make the same suggestion and it's going nowhere, it's like, what is the point? I'm just trying to. Correct, but we asked the same thing, a year ago, 2 years ago, when the previous version of the work program was presented in front of the committee, so.
And it may have more value if the motion is simply to approve the work program, and if you have things that you'd like to look forward to for next year, have very specific questions that have it evaluated in advance of next year's modification. Just a suggestion. Because I think sometimes when we combine things, so many things in a motion, it gets lost.
But the advantage there, just as a suggestion, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're looking at this holistically, these are important things for function. So it carries that motion to the board for the board's consideration. So that's really where the action's going to be. So yeah.
And I'm not disagreeing with the motion. It's just procedurally, we keep doing the same motions and nothing happens.
But Alex, what I heard was there's an effort by the Turnpike Enterprise to pick up the pace on parking ride lots, which is a priority for us. And keeping that in our motion as we go forward keeps the pressure on that suggestion from us.
Because I've heard that for the last 5-6 years, that if we're out of the parking ride lots.
I guess probably Danny can address here why no consideration has been made, but I think what Rennie is saying that we are doing more consideration. I hope the board picks up on this item and put further stress at their meeting. That's why I wanted to include it in my motion.
Are other MPOs requesting park and ride lots as well?
I haven't had a direct request from an MPO. We just know that it's part of the goal to provide travel opportunities.
Right.
So I'm trying to remember if there were any identified in Palm Beach. We already went through our concept in anticipation of the conversion, and we eliminated a large number of them throughout the system because of the safety issue.
And are any being reintroduced?
I have to get my concept report out and I'll send it to you and see whether there was any in Palm Beach County.
If you could forward that back to the committee, I think that would help.
I will do that.
Where the existing ones have been phased out and where new ones may be located.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be an issue, since it's really an issue of regional significance. It might be something that we want to ask SEFTEC to pick up, which is the 3-county MPO for Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach, because that's where we have these commuter opportunities that seem to be consistent ones.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that list, can you also list the safety reasons why those were removed?
For example, and don't quote me on this, but I think with State Road 80 was one area where we have a parking area for the employees at the plaza. The question is, how do you get people in and out of that area safely? We allow employees to cross the ramps, but do we want to allow citizens to do that, travelers? It's dangerous to have the employees do that even when they're trained. So how do they get in and out of a ramp and cross opposing traffic without introducing another signal? Those are some of the issues we're challenged with. People are turning with a light starting to accelerate onto a ramp, or when they're coming off of the ramp, they're heading to that traffic signal. So if you put a new driveway in the middle of that movement, you're introducing a lot of conflicts. So those are the things that we have to look at.
And it's going to be more and more, especially with the high speed entrance and exit, because of the automated tolls. That issue would be there, but it could be designed that, for example, the access could be on the not on the ramp.
The access could be on 80, which is what I was recommending. It would be a new driveway off of State Road 80 instead of on a high speed entrance ramp or exit ramp.
But those things,
and those
could
are
be designed
the kind of things that we probably need to look at together and see if there is a solution that your traffic engineers and public works would be willing to accept.
And the other layer, of course, is DOT has a park and ride program with an inventory of facilities and funding to establish them. So that's where those things maybe come together.
And actually, we had a lengthy discussion a few years back about FDOT's efforts and how to be coordinated with what was happening on the turnpike. So the idea was, hey, some of those facilities should be very close to the turnpike's entrances, and also coordinate with the local government so that as part of conditions of approvals of new development, non-residential development, there could be some park and ride facilities incorporated, especially, again, if those developments were close to turnpike entrances. But I don't know if any of that has been advanced. That discussion happened 2-3 years ago.
Just for a minute clarity, could you restate your motion so that we make sure we capture what you're actually suggesting to include?
The approval of the program as presented, with special consideration to improving the existing park and ride lots or providing new park and ride lots. And second, to move ahead with the 6 lane from Lantana to Plaza North so that the bottleneck situation is not created.
Do that simultaneously with the 18th.
Okay, so the park and ride lot suggested, you're not necessarily tying that to the introduction of all electronic tolling at the interchange. You're just saying, hey, while you're doing construction in Palm Beach County, please consider where you may include park and ride facilities. Okay, generalized, okay.
So staff's clear on how you, the motion and what, how you'll act on this, correct? Okay. Is there any other discussion? We have the motion and we have a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item is our amendments to the 15 to 19 transportation improvement program. Just continue. You have two.
Yes, those are the two I referenced that were we wanted to advance design for the two existing six-lane sections of the main line. We built those six-lane sections early when needed. But now we want to go back and design for the eight-lane so that that'll fit in with the rest of the eight-lane design that's going to go throughout Broward County. So we'd like to advance that for this year. We're ready to start working on that.
Any questions from the group on those two specific items which comprise that?
Nick, I believe you mentioned earlier the turnpike was paying for this facility coming out of our project, right?
Correct. Anything else?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve. And second, any other discussion or comments? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. The next item is item 2C. It's a motion to recommend receipt file of the 24 long range full documentation.
That's
great. I'd like a complete overview of the entire 2040 plan.
Strap on your seatbelts. We're going to read to you from the 342 pages that comprise.
Can we reconsider that much election now?
Impeachment.
Yeah. No, no one. It's not going to get better. I promise. Yes, it's not going to get better.
This item is on the agenda for you because we want you to be aware that the long-range planning process was based on a lot of detailed analysis. We didn't provide all of that to you as we went through the process. We tried to give it to you in chunks, and then we presented to you as committees and to the board for adoption the summary that said these are how we answered each of the critical questions. Where is our growth going to occur? What facilities would we like to provide? How much revenue do we have available to us to provide facilities, and then what is our list of projects and programs that we want to accomplish over the next 25 years? That summary was adopted by the MPO board in October. We provided now the full documentation supporting the analysis and conclusions of the summary so that you're aware that that document exists and so that you can provide any feedback, criticisms, suggestions to us. I wasn't going to go through it at all.
No.
But I'm willing to talk to you about any questions you may have in particular, or you can provide feedback to us offline as well.
When we were reviewing DOT's most recent plan and comparing that with the numbers that we had in the long-range plan, there was a significant discrepancy in the amount of available funds between the two sets of projections. What came about from that? We're going to look into that.
What seems to have come about? Let me summarize your question. We saw the DOT work program, the draft work program in December, that showed us available revenues for fiscal year 20. That we tried then to match up with the long range plan estimate that we had for fiscal year 20. What seems to have come about is that work program staff from DOT said the long-range plan estimates provide general guidance and direction, but do not correlate directly with available funding in the five-year work program. So while you can plan based on that estimate and direction, you shouldn't hold us to the numbers, is kind of my summary.
In other words, difference between a long-range plan and a program.
And frankly, a takeaway I have from that conversation is that we should be revising the way we forecast revenue for the next update to our long-range plan. Instead of letting a statewide agency provide estimates that are not extrapolations of the current level of funding, I would prefer to extrapolate current funding in the work program because it's a little bit more concrete, reliable, real numbers to avoid this discrepancy. I don't have a solution to that for this plan document, though, other than to acknowledge that we may have overestimated the revenue and then, as a result of that, overpromised the projects and programs that we're able to accomplish.
So in the event that next year the forecast comes out again and we're, what were we, about 70% of what we had programmed? I mean, with the actuals, 70-80, from vaguely remembering. It was a large discrepancy.
It was a big gap.
If we're in that same ballpark again next year, I think we have no choice but to reopen the 2040 plan and decide what we're going to chop out, because it's completely unrealistic. I mean, at a 70 to 80% funding level, there's a lot of good projects that are just not going to happen, or they've now moved to 2050. So, I mean, and that's the reality. It doesn't make sense for us to keep trying to work for the next 5 years of a program that it's never going to happen, or significantly. I mean, if it was 5%, you know, we expect that, but we're talking 20 to 25% of the, what was that? How many billion was it that was in that plan? It was a big number. It was a big number.
Yeah. 4 overall. But we were looking primarily at around $1 billion of combined federal and state revenue allocated to the MPO to lead the projects. I should make two other points that I've gathered from my conversations with DOT. One is you can't base an analysis on 1 year of programming, that they've asked to look over multiple years, which I've done, and I still think the analysis conclusion seems valid. But they're saying, okay, there will be up and down fluctuations because it's a district-wide allocation of funds, and sometimes big projects get built in other counties and your funding goes down, and sometimes your county gets more money and other counties go down. So you have to look at the ups and downs over a longer trend. The other point that they made was in the long-range planning process, the MPO is the lead agency to identify projects and programs that would be accomplished with that funding. But when it comes to allocating funds in the work program, the DOT takes the lead on allocating funds to individual projects. They consider our priority list, but they control the funding as it is applied to individual projects, particularly with respect to the generic, what I would say generic, but the more general other arterials revenue category in our long-range plan. They would say, okay, that's comprised of a variety of fund codes that are then allocated to projects by the DOT staff for consideration by the MPO. But the DOT chooses where to put that money in the work program. As far as suggesting an amendment to the plan to choose what we would back out, we do have a priority order of projects in the long-range plan based on demand volumes and relative interests and opportunity costs for the as derived from communication with the different agencies. So my suggestion is the long-range plan identifies 25 years of projects to work on, but we only have to live under this document for 5 years. So I don't know if it would be a fruitful exercise to trim the last 5 to 10 years out of the plan when we're still going to spend our time the next 5 years working on the first 10 to 15 year projects. That's my input to the committee. Now, you can ask me to do it either way, but practically, I still think we're going to be focusing our attention on the stuff that we wanted to do next, and that's really not going to change.
Any other comments? I think that, you know, that's one
so many other components and aspects of the planning. And I think Nick, you and staff have done a great job of shepherding the process and bringing it forward to us, you know, certain decision points in community development. I know it's my first time being involved in a long-range plan as part of this committee, so I appreciate everything that you did. I assume that that means you're going to be starting your consultant selection soon for the 2045 plan.
That's it.
I need to see that we have a motion.
Need a forensic account.
Yeah. It seems like we were just selected. Do we have any motions in regard to item 2C, please?
Motion. I'm going to
Kim? Motion. Second.
Second.
Second. Do we have a discussion on the item?
Yes.
Yes.
I have a question. Under employment, there's a very little paragraph which explains how the employment was developed using the same growth rate as population growth rate. But I think the population growth rate seemed to be a little bit different than the employment growth rate, if I'm correct. I haven't looked at the whole detail, but if we need to have a little bit more detail, would that be available on the employment growth as it has been described?
I can tell you my sob story, but it doesn't help answer your question.
Okay, I
think my general response would be we are continuing to refine the forecasted growth of population and employment. Population working with the county's planning division, employment making sure that we've accurately accounted for all the major development approvals that our local governments have issued. Because as we've dug deeper into that particular component of the plan, it's developed some levels of discomfort with that we've captured everything as accurately as we could. The trend, yeah, we have 1,400 traffic analysis zones for Palm Beach County. But the intent for the forecasted employment was to retain a relatively similar ratio of employment to population from the base year to the future year. So we have we have more comfort forecasting how many people will be here. We actually point to someone else. We point to Beaver and say they give us a middle forecast that we use as our target. Then we distribute the people around the county as we consider land uses from everyone's comp plan and development approvals that we think will actually develop, materialize as real projects. We do the same thing with the employment forecast, but it just felt like, the more we've dug into this, it feels like we can stand to improve the connectivity between development approvals that your local governments are issuing and forecasted SE socioeconomic data for our individual areas in Palm Beach County. And so we're going to be working on that process as we go forward, not just for the next long-range plan, but on an ongoing basis, so that when you are hearing a request for a development and your local government takes action on it, we capture that and we update our forecast more dynamically. So there's room for improvement.
And I choose as part of that just to... Another aspect where there may be some room for improvement is the scoring process that was used for prioritizing some of the projects. If you may recall, when Netwich Consulting presented to us the list of projects and the scoring, the number one priority for the entire county was a small section of 45th Street between Hammer Hill and Military, which is, I think it's like a quarter of a mile, so the widening of that. According to the scoring, that was the most critical project for Palm Beach County from transportation for the next few years, which just didn't make sense at all. And again, some of the numbers that they used for the scoring showed that. But again, so I think for the future cycle, that's something that maybe needs to be refined from within, because while some of the projects at the top make sense from our regional perspective, a few clearly did not. There was no way that was the most critical project that we had in Palm Beach County for the next 30 years or 20 years. So again, just a general comment on that for future refinements as you were discussing that.
Yeah. But he knew the baseball stadium was coming in, that's right.
Yeah, 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 that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah, job known,
make a crystal portal.
Prognosticator, yeah. That's his job.
And scoring's difficult. It's always going to be subjective, even in technical basis.
Yeah, but for example, they got a lot of points because it was considered transit hub. And I think the only thing in that is one pump turn route. I think route 31 stops there. And there's a stop where the buses stop every 30 minutes. I mean, how that is a transit hub. I think they got a lot of points because of that.
I think that's a discussion for the next consultant.
It's a good one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another thing, Nick, is it possible to obtain kind of a list of changes from 2035 cost feasible to 2040 cost feasible? That will help us a lot if there is such a table. I may have missed in the document, I didn't see it. Because we are now going to, the board has initiated an amendment to move our 2035 to 2040 plan somewhat to be consistent with that view. It may not be completely consistent, but it will be somewhat consistent, and we will need to follow that one closely. That's a 6 to 9 month long process.
Yes, I can provide that.
Nick, question in reference to your statement that the MPO's role is the long range plan, and then the DOT staff's role is more of the logistics on it. Is that normal for MPOs? Because it seems like we spend a lot of energy getting into the weeds, handing it over, and they're, I don't want to use the words, they're just going to do what they want. But it kind of felt this time, they just did what they wanted. So should we not be spending that level of energy because they're just going to do what they want? And should we just stay at the 20,000 foot level and keep these meetings to an hour? Because we've had 2, 3 hour, 4 hour meetings in the weeds, I mean, way into the weeds, and then it goes over. And like you just said, you've been talking about parking ride lots for how long? And it went over, and we're still talking about it. We spent 20 minutes on it. All of these issues where we're really into the details, and we bring all these experts. We probably got $3,000 an hour sitting in here every month that goes over to DOT, and they take it under advisement. But what is the real cost benefit of our time in here if that's not our goal?
That's a loaded question.
It is a loaded question.
Okay, let's just start with the first part. What are other MPOs doing, and what does their relationship look like, and are we consistent? We'll leave more of the rest of that. A little more of an opine than a question.
Leading the
way.
Remember what I said, it'd get worse if you move me over.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to control you.
So we have three priority lists that we seek to adopt annually as a signal or transmitting a request for funding to the DOT for programming the projects into their work program. And we have three lists because we're looking at three different revenue streams. We're looking at the major projects, which were funded primarily by the other arterials, general revenue category in our plan, and trying to determine, based on our understanding of our community, which is very important, especially when you consider where the DOT headquarters are and the level of intimate familiarity that maybe their staff have with Palm Beach County because of their location. It's very important that we identify what major projects we want to advance for Palm Beach County next. That message is a request for funding that they then translate into actual allocations in the work program using the funds that are available to them. We are also trying to create a more definitively controlled program by the MPO, the local initiatives program, that we would say this committee, as well as the citizens and the bicycle pedestrian committee, have a direct responsibility for identifying the best projects that we believe locally should be advanced for federal funding. We've allocated revenue for that program, and we expect that revenue to be put on the projects that we have on our list. Practically, that didn't come to complete fruition this year because it's a new program. I'm not sure that program management staff or upper management staff fully understood the shift in dynamic that this MPO was engaging in from the way we've previously done business to way, the way we're trying to do business now. I think the way we're trying to do business now is much more consistent with what I've seen other NGOs doing around the country, where they take a more active role in identifying and funding projects that they would like to accomplish in their local areas. And they have funding to do that. They are in control of a program of funding that they can choose projects to build out of. And then the third priority list that we have in our adopted list that we send to the DOT is the transportation alternatives funding. And I bring that up only to say that there are three that we have varying degrees of control over. Transportation alternatives, we have a specific priority list for non-motorized improvements that we, through the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee, have prioritized historically. Those projects are funded as cost reimbursement grants to local governments that the MPO has direct control over that. It's a well-defined, extremely transparent process. We're moving the local initiatives program to that model. We're going to get there. We will, you know, over the next year, 2 years, as we get everyone comfortable with how this process should work, we will have that same kind of direct control over funding for that program at a higher level to accomplish more projects that are identified through the local communities and to make better use of the $3,000 an hour that's being submitted time-wise in input to this committee. That's our model that we're seeking to establish. And then the last one, the major priorities, that's a bigger picture question of, okay, how did the rest of the DOT maintenance conversations go? Where did their bridge replacement fund, like those kind of off-the-top items that they say we have to fund those first. Then they look at the remaining revenue available to accomplish the projects that we said were most important to us and evaluate the eligibility of the funds against the projects that we've picked. And they do their best to advance those. And it's a collaboration. It's not a we tell them and they have to follow, but it's also not a they get to do whatever they want and only pay attention to us if it happens to suit their fancy. It's really a collaborative effort that we want to build that synergy with the departments and make sure that projects that are beneficial to both the DOT and the community of Palm Beach County are advanced for funding and implementation.
And if I can jump in, I've been a member of the DPAC for almost 19 years, and I'm showing my age here now. But of the 19 years, I don't think there's one instance in which the MPO's priorities for what is now transportation alternatives or was before transportation enhancement was modified by FDOT. So whatever the MPO said, these are our local priorities for this type of project, FDOT took it and basically the same order, those were the projects that were funded. So if we're trying to replicate that model for other types of projects, hopefully we'll have the same level of coordination with FDOT on that. The only issue was the MPO board, political decision, they decided to insert a project at the last minute, a former county commissioner, that was his pet project, so he basically put that at the top of the list, even though it hadn't even been presented to the DPAC. But with that exception, FDOT has been working. FDOT has basically taken the MPO's recommendations and just used that as their priority.
All right, any other comments? We have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. We have a number of information items. Nick, you just referenced local initiatives. That's the first item on here.
Yep, and Mr. Chair, I'm going to bring up Fran Taylor, who I introduced to you earlier. She's going to just go over the application schedule with the committee.
Good morning. Hinting the conversation of fiduciary control, I'd like to announce the 2015 schedule for the local initiative and transportation alternatives funding program. We had a workshop last week on January 29th. It was well attended. FDOT was in attendance and had presentations from Christine Basiska and her colleague about specific questions for the application process. So I just wanted to go over the calendar really quickly. The program kicked off on January 16th. Again, we had the application workshop or applicant workshop on the 29th from 2 to 4. The applications are due to the MPO by noon of February 27th. We're working on with a constrained time frame here. The applications will be screened on the MPO side between February 27th, as soon as we receive those applications, until March 20th. On March 20th, we'll submit the project list back to FDOT. On April 1st, we'll have a joint technical advisory committee and citizens advisory committee meeting to review the presentations and rank those that choose to present. And April 2nd, the VGPAC will review the non-motorized projects from the local initiative and transportation alternatives projects, and rank all projects and review presentations. On May 29th, FDOT's going to return their eligibility determinations. We'll give those final rankings back to we'll give that back to the MPO for final ranking. That should happen around July 1st and 2nd, and the MPO board will approve items on July 15th. On August 11th, we'll get our final rankings back from FDOT, and feel free to correct me if I made any mistakes. Okay, so that's the calendar for both.
No mistakes. I do want to just highlight one arrow in particular. That's this bottom one here. And the reason I'm doing that is because our suggestion to you is that we would have a joint technical and citizens committee meeting on the April 1st date, where we would hear brief presentations of each application and then be required to rank the project, similar to what the VPAC does with their transportation alternatives project list, as a committee. We would formulate our suggested scoring and put together our priority list as part of that joint committee meeting. That's a departure from anything we've done, but again, we're trying to infuse this organization with more control over the process and be able to identify the projects that we would like to fund more directly. So the question for you is, are you willing to participate in that type of process? The alternative being that it would be more of a staff-driven prioritization of scoring, which we're going to conduct anyway. We have to do that because DOT's asked us for a preliminary scoring. We'll do our own checklist of, okay, this is how many points we would think would get, this project would get in each of the categories. And then we would just present that scoring list to you, and you would have the opportunity to reorder as a committee and say, we don't like the way you did this, that, and the other. But you wouldn't hear presentations. You would just have the application materials as backup. And so that's an option available to you. So my question to you is, do you see it as valuable to engage in the process as we proposed it, or would you like to be able to, a little bit less hands-on?
If we go with a hands-on approach, we may be talking about a day-long commitment, potentially, depending upon the number of projects that are submitted. I mean, if we go by the BPAC's precedent, then we spend most of the day, and again, this presentation may be a little bit shorter than the BPAC presentation, but you may have many more projects because you have more categories here. So just something to consider. I mean, and so we may be here morning and afternoon, or at least part of the afternoon, if we make that commitment.
Question? I'm not clear how you reconcile rankings by two different organizations.
Two committees.
The system that you're using to rank the projects for the local initiatives program is non-category specific. It's a general scoring system. So in theory, you would have apples to apples scores. Now I understand there's subjectivity involved.
Maybe I'm not making my question clear. So if one committee ranks a project as one, another committee ranks it as six, how does that get reconciled as to what the MPO's priorities are?
The answer to that is two committees acting separately are not reviewing the same project, according to this.
Yeah.
So the joint committee meeting of the technical and citizens advisory committees would be reviewing only the TSM transit and freight application. So those two committees acting together would establish a ranking and score for those three categories.
And BPAC will do the ones they've always done.
BPAC will do the transportation alternatives ones. And then what I'm also suggesting, and this is a hiccup that I'm looking for input on, but I'm suggesting that the non-motorized local initiative project applications would also be reviewed by the BPAC, even though they're competing for funding with these other three categories. And then the way I would merge those two lists is by looking at the prioritization of the projects by those two different groups and the scores assigned to the projects by those two different groups, and then I would put them together based on their scoring.
Meld the two.
So I would meld the two. Now, you're not having two committees review the same application, but you are having two committees reviewing applications competing for the same funding. And so there may be a predisposition to grade high at the BPAC so that their projects fit in the higher part of the combined list as opposed to the lower part, or vice versa.
Now that you suggested it.
And so,
I have this
kind of human behavioral challenge where I want to collect input from appropriate committees to compile a final list without giving anyone too much control or authority over the process.
Yeah, I think it makes sense though, as you have presented over there, to let them do the non-motorized local initiative, or BPAC.
If you don't use the scores and you use the rankings, you can control for that.
Well, but then
how do you use the score to do the ranking?
And then
you take the two groups of rankings and smash them.
But how do you rank? Is the top project for non-motorized that BPAC ranked better or higher score than the transit, number one transit that this committee ran?
That's the problem with that.
You can't. Unless you put scores, numbers, right. you can put them to compete against each other.
Right.
Nick, how would you address the fact that if the TEC was involved, you might have many of the members around this table having competing projects?
The way, if I can jump in, the way the BPAC addresses that is if, for example, the city of West Palm Beach presents a project, a bicycle pedestrian project, I have to recuse myself from scoring that project. When Palm Beach County presents a project, the Palm Beach County staff have to recuse themselves from scoring that particular project. So we could have a somewhat similar system if there is, again, the Aware project, then Randall would not be participating in the scoring of that particular project. That's how BPAC has done it for many years to eliminate any concerns about bias from the scorers.
So there's new Russian judges in BPAC.
Nick, have you anticipated this?
We're implementing a new program. So yeah, we're trying to anticipate these issues, but we're working out the kinks. So I'm open to suggestions to refine the process.
On the non-motorized project, you could have both committees do the review, average the scores, and when you take that score over into a ranking, because if one committee thinks that the non-motorized are very high and another committee thinks they're very low, it'll fall out as a larger collective. It'd be the same thing if we're all in the same room doing the scores together.
What you're suggesting is different from what is there, because non-motorized will only be, the way it is set up, will only be by BPAC.
And that's my suggestion was, as an option to normalize the two priorities of different groups, everybody scores, mash them up, and whatever that score is, it'll fall sort of in line.
Well, after these are scored, then Nick, did you and your group sit down and prioritize what you think would be best?
Our intent is to take the staff direct control over that final list of priorities and make it minimal.
Right.
And we want committees to own not just the scores, but the order that goes forward to the MPO board.
If you've got the three committees, they each say there's 10 projects, they list their top 10, and then you sit, or a group of representatives from each committee sit down and discuss it and meld it out to which order they should be in. Because, you know, the bicycle group are going to want to rank theirs higher. The other people are going to want to rank theirs higher. So fine, once you bring it all in, then you sit down and hopefully come to a compromise.
Or maybe you can get the board reaction even before that. Okay, this will be the split between non-motorized to motorized. So you know that you can only score like that many projects that takes up all the money that board has already allotted for that month. So yeah, but let's try this new approach. I think that maybe a good idea.
Make a question. After the April 2nd meeting for BPAC, there's no date on when you're going to transmit this group's recommendation to the DOT. Because May 29th, they come back with an eligibility determination. So it seems there's a just inside of 6 to 7 weeks between those two dates. Is that an opportunity to reconcile these two lists in that gap, bringing, I don't know, what representative group together, maybe representative from both, and try to sort of push this list together to one consolidated list? Is that a time opportunity for that function?
Sure.
Because that sounds like it would potentially, at least everybody's in a room, we can figure it out, and there's some time at that point.
Okay.
So
Terrence, didn't DOT say the other day though that was the time they used to do their field determinations, and that's why they needed so much time between April 2nd and May 29th?
In the past with the EPAC applications, there's always been a lag getting information back from DOT when it's been submitted to them quickly after they've been ranked.
And
there's always been a rush at the very end.
And that is my soapbox, which I expressed the other day with this. Again, we're losing, we're now jumping to a somewhat different issue, but we're losing 2 months, at least for transportation alternatives projects from what has been typically the case. Now there were 5-6 weeks notice for project submission, where before it was almost 3 months. And again, there's a lot of work that is involved with some of these applications, and the concern in the past has been that FDOT has up to 3 months to review these projects, and we know from very reliable sources they were sitting on the stuff for 2.5 months, and then in the final 2 weeks they were doing that review, and now we're giving them an additional 6 weeks. But we're losing, the applicants are now losing almost 2 months as a result of that. So again, that's another concern that I hope we can do something for next cycle, because it hasn't been historically true that FDOT needs all that time to do their review. They're sitting on it for a while, and at the last minute they say, hey, local government, we have these concerns about your project. Give us your response next week. It has been given that time.
Can't trust those government workers.
One way around that, it might be for next year, instead of having a program kick off in January, maybe, you know, have to kick off November, or so that, I mean, there's plenty of you get busy, you tend to forget about these.
Yeah.
You know, theoretically, you should have your project ready to go now, but in reality, that's not going to happen because everybody's so busy. But if you put the early warning system out that, hey, in 2 or 3 months you need to get something done, I think that might help.
maybe a pre-screening meeting in November.
So we talked about
an idea of the scale.
We talked about that after the meeting the other day, about having a watered-down application to do that sort of pre-process. Where you get most of the same information.
Yeah.
It's just easier because, as a wrinkle for anybody who didn't come to the meeting, your application has to be signed and sealed by your engineering department now. So all the departments from all the different municipalities that used to just put in projects, the engineering department has to be the focus. So if you haven't already talked to them about getting on their calendar, you may not be getting any projects in.
Well, and for some of us, our applications need to be approved by the city commission and signed by the mayor, and that takes a lot of time. I mean, scheduling that and going to the commission meeting, as we know, is not a matter of we can do it from 1 week to the next. It doesn't happen that way.
So this year we may be getting a whopping handful of projects with this short timeline and the mandate that it has to go through each individual engineering department. And they didn't even address some of the communities that may not have one, that may outsource their engineering. What are they going to do about that? So it may not be a very good process this year with all the constraints that changed.
I think we need to keep one thing in mind. Yeah, Kim.
Just a thought. Nick had asked a question. Do we want a paper screen or do a presentation as well? So I like the idea of getting a presentation, but a very formatted one. So 5 slides, 5 minutes, that's it.
Yeah.
And those presentations get submitted ahead of time, right? So, and that way, I mean, you can get through that's 20 presentations in a little over an hour, so, or an hour and a half, you know, with a little break time in there. So I think it really adds a lot of texture instead of trying to do a paper screen.
I think we need to keep in mind this is not an action item for us today. I think you've submitted this information. For information, it's an advertised process right now publicly on the website. I think that you've heard some suggestions.
Yep.
And I think that as you go through the process this year, do a constant analysis as to how the process could improve in future years.
Yep.
And better integration. And then if we have comments through, you know, sometimes it's hard to anticipate how to improve things until you've gone through it. And we'll learn that.
You know, when we developed those scoring sheets, it was last year, it was interesting because, you know, we thought, okay, these are pretty good, and then you go and you take them and you crash projects against them, and strange things happen sometimes, and it's like, this, you know, what happened here, and then you go back and kind of reevaluate the...
VPAD, for example, has a separate scoring criteria for projects, and it's something that we have been refining for over 15 years, and every year... we discuss whether there's a need to make tweaks, and oftentimes there is after we realize that there are projects that may be great, but somehow
they
don't fit into the scoring criteria. So it's a process of constant refinement there.
Yeah.
Question on April 1, joint TAC and CAC, don't the project already come through TAC eventually anyway? The TSM transit and freight local right now. They're going to come to us anyway at the ranking and our recommendations, no?
That is the current.
Okay, but this time it's going to be joined with the CAC.
If you recall last year, we did have a joint meeting. It was actually all three committees, and we had a very ambitious agenda for that joint meeting, where we were both establishing the scoring system and reviewing the priority scores assigned to the projects.
Okay.
We bit off a lot. I don't know if it was more than we could chew, but we bit off a lot.
Yes.
And we probably didn't pay as much attention, and it was a paper scoring approach as opposed to a presentation approach to reviewing projects. So now we're trying to focus our attention on the actual review of the projects and make some refinements based on last year's experience.
Okay, let's see if we can bow tie this conversation. Our next meeting is on March 4th. That'll be after all the applications are due. And I think, Nick, you and your staff are in a position to create a go-forward plan, because if you get 100 applications, it's a very different scenario than if you get 10, right? So we can decide. We may not, if we get 100 applications, there's no time for 5 minutes for orals. If you get 10, then we can do that. We can see where we're at, especially as they get sort of pre-screened and vetted for all the documents there. Is the engineering department on board? Who's been collaborating? Like I said, I can tell you myself, I have a lot of work to do to get an application in between now and the 27th, but all that's required in those applications. And I think a lot of other communities are going to see how tall that challenge is, and you're going to get 10 to 15 at best.
Good suggestion. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for that input.
My final note is we have contact information on the next slide.
Did the PowerPoint for the meeting get up on the website?
I think it did.
Okay.
Let's see, where's the
website? Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go. So if you have any further questions about the Transportation Alternatives Program or Safe Routes to School programs, my contact information is below, email address and phone number. If you have any questions about the Local Initiatives Program, you would contact Luke Lambert. And that's his contact information as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good job for the first time.
Thank you. See, we're friendly.
Good.
Good.
Next item, U.S. Department of Transportation Mayor's Challenge. Senator Freese,
here.
Hi, Liz.
Liz, stand over here
in
a second. Click on the next slide.
Let me see if I can get it.
Yeah,
that goes in. So, Mr. Chair, again, Valerie
recording?
Yeah, to talk about this item.
Your first time too, the pressure's on.
All right, so we just wanted to let everyone know, some of you already may know, that a couple weeks ago, Secretary Fox announced a challenge for mayors and local elected officials for safer people, safer streets. This is the website. The challenge is based on the 2010 policy statement on bicycle and pedestrian accommodation to create more livable communities, safer streets for all users. And the mayors and the local elected officials that choose to participate in this challenge will be invited to attend a mayor's summit in March for the Safer People, Safer Streets at the U.S. DOT headquarters. So the mayors that sign up and what they're asked to do is to do a call to action to issue a public statement about the importance of bicycle and pedestrian safety, form a local action team to advance safety and accessibility goals, and take local action through the challenge activities. These are the challenge activities. These are also hyperlinked in this PowerPoint presentation to the actual pages where they explain them more, but basically promoting complete streets, fixing barriers for pedestrians and cyclists, gathering bicycle and pedestrian data, designing right, creating networks, improving laws, and educating and enforcing bicycle and pedestrian safety. If you'd like to learn more, there's actually a webinar next Tuesday that they're going to explain this challenge in more detail. So this is the direct link to that webinar. And you can also find it on the website. And if you're mayor or local elected official would like to join the challenge, you can visit the website right here or email the team leader's contact information to pedbikesafety@dot.gov. So below is the main website as well for more information. So we just wanted to let everyone know you haven't heard about this challenge yet. In addition, we wanted to highlight the NACDO Urban Street Design Guide. This is a book. And also, a lot of information is available online on their website, but basically provides a toolbox of tactics cities are using to make streets safer, more livable, and economically vibrant. It provides the basic roadmap for how to take on these initiatives and bring them to fruition. And we actually have some of these books that we purchased, and we're going to provide one to each local government represented on our Palm Beach County MPO board. So, but there's a website as well if you'd like to find out more information about this. And that's.
Thank you very much. You're very good. All right. Nick, you're hiring some good stuff. Correspondence, more information items.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first group of correspondence is a couple of resolutions taken similar fashion to the MTO board action in December, objecting to the delay of the State Route 7 construction from 60th Street North up to Northlake Boulevard, and urging the project to be constructed in fiscal year 16 or as early as practicable. And I do want to supplement the item on your agenda and note that the Palm Beach County Board of County Commissioners voted yesterday in a vote of 6-1 also to object to the delay of the State Route 7 project. And then the other item I've included for you as correspondence in the agenda is the DOT response to the MPO board's action regarding the work program. If you recall, we have formulated three suggested amendments to the work program, how they've allocated funding, and they provided a written response to us, and I wanted to put that in the backup material. So you guys were aware that they heard our voice. And I think, Terrence, you had even mentioned to me, as a side note, what do we do if the MPO board adopts or approves something like the work program with suggested changes or objections? And so to illustrate the point, when the board did take that action, I wrote a letter to the secretary formally communicating that action and requesting a response. And they are going to be carrying forward, in addition to responding to us in writing, they are going to be carrying forward the MPO board's requested funding level for the local initiatives program and our objection to the delay of State Road 7 as they present the work program in March to the Florida Transportation Commission, and ultimately becomes part of the statewide work program. And they have to defend their proposed allocation of funds in the face of the MPO's objection at both the Transportation Commission level and then at the DOT Secretary level.
Knowing that now that it's been sort of codified by the MPO of the county and most municipalities, the legislative initiatives that are coming out of Oneida City, small municipalities in the county, does this information translate onto those legislative initiatives more globally as we enter Palm Beach County Days and go to Tallahassee to sort of get our legislators aware of our issues, or does this not necessarily rise to that level to make the legislative initiatives list for those organizations? We like lists, and there's a lot of them.
Well,
you don't have a lobby.
I don't have a lobby fund source, so I don't have a lobbying role to play. But you know, I can communicate the actions taken by the board, and then make sure that you know that those entities are aware when they're developing their lists that these may be important to include.
Nick, if I could just add, as a precursor to that meeting, where the work program presented to the FTC earlier this week, it's protocol. Each district presents their work program to the state secretary. We presented it and specifically touched on this item. This is, from our recollection, I think the only project-specific item that even came up in this type of capacity. So the state secretary is obviously, besides the correspondence, was part of that discussion at that.
And how was that
presentation? Along the same lines as the sentence in here, that we're going to work with the NCAP to try and advance the project in the next time. So, the dialogue continues. It's not just, okay, these letters were exchanged and it's left at that.
Will this be in the 2045
plan? Also, for informational purposes, the board also voted as a transmittal hearing in county's amendment round 151 to delete the segment of State Route 7 between North Lake and Beeline from our thoroughfare map, and the final adoption hearing on that item will be on, I believe it's on April 29th, but if somebody is interested, let me know, I'll give you the final date. That will also be helpful in accomplishing this segment from 60th Street north to North Lake, because that is a part of the mitigation.
I
think it's April 29th.
Any other comments on correspondence? Next item on the agenda are summary points from the December MPO board meeting and the January board retreat. I don't know that we need to go through the summary comments. They're there for all of us to read. Does anybody have any comments on this? Seeing none, administrative items. We have item 4A, member comments. We'll limit them to sports. Next month will be academics.
Signing day today.
Yes, it is.
Really,
that's why
I
want to get out of here.
Go Gators.
And if you're on the one-yard line, run it! Run it four times. If you have to fail, run it the ball up the middle.
That's right.
Okay.
Are you?
No, I'm not. I just like good football.
Jamie might have a serious question.
I know.
Hopefully.
I just want to make aware that Purdue University is currently ranked ahead of.
Who?
Purdue.
Purdue University. Is currently ranked ahead of Illinois.
Does Jamie really need
Westmont?
Who's the alternate?
Some of the world's biggest program.
If the Gators aren't going to make the tournament, though, we're happy to take a piece of Kentucky's prize.
SMC.
So build for next year. Top year.
All right. This could be good going forward. Next meeting is March 4th. Everybody be here with bells on. And if we have nothing else to the good of the order, we need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Anybody you want. All in favor?